And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And as you do, I was thinking, wow, that was a miserable couple of weeks. At least the second game was exciting, in that we managed to cough up a lead with 8 minutes to go, but not necessarily all that much fun. I was trying to think, oh God, that's got to be the worst fortnight of games we've had for a long time. And of course the answer is always 2016, where we had back-to-back games in towards the end of the season against the Hawks and the Giants, where we lost by a combined 150 points. But I don't know.
Yes. Nice research. I had the reaction to that game, and you know, there's very little. I mean, obviously we had injuries, but they had their best player out, and they only have two good players, and the other one destroyed us. And also, they've got a very good young player, but he's not consistent at all. They won by 40 points on the expected shots.
Yeah, which surprised me, because it did feel like Ben King was slotting them from 45 metres on a angle gun barrel straight every time I looked up.
I think there might be some residual trauma from the previous game as well that might have added to that impression.
I would having just seen them back-to-back, I would not trade Max for Ben without a fair bit tacked on.
Yeah, interesting.
That kicking motion, maybe... No, I haven't watched a lot of Gold Coast. Like almost all Australians, I haven't watched Gold Coast much this year. And yeah, that's a beautiful kicking motion.
But just the watching the game and on Tiger Twitter afterwards, you know, I get a bit mawkish in films, and I was reminded at the end of Toy Story 3, where they're going into the incinerator and they're all going to die together, but you know that they all hold hands, and to me that's the true ending of the film. It was too dark to actually end it that way because it's a kids' movie. But if the producers, if it was still the 1950s and you could kill Bambi in Disney films, that's how they would have ended it. And it felt
I'm leaving this out of the show blurb.
But it just felt like it was just watching the end of an era. And it doesn't mean we won't still have good games. But
Richmond Tiger Talk, the one where we all go into the fire together.
All right, can you just humour me for a second? It was an emotional night. And it was just, I just had this moment of, not saying it's over, but I just saw the end, particularly for Cochin, which we'll talk about analytically in a second. This is going to be such a hard era to retire, because we're not just retiring people who were a lot of fun, and you know, like retiring people like Joel Bynum was hard, but retiring these players who've given
three-time premiership captain Brownlow medalists,
well, all the greatest moments, like this whole cohort had given us by far our greatest sporting moments. So it's going to be it's going to be so hard to do, and that was sort of the moment of sadness of when you can see the end. That was my overwhelming reaction to the game, not sort of anger, not the fact that we got absolutely hosed by the umpires in the last quarter. I'll have a rant about that later, but I don't want to move the point. It was just my reaction to the game. It was sadness, because you realize something is not necessarily at the end, but close to the end. And but it's also great, because it was such a wonderful time. So sorry to start the show on a down note. I guess it was a down game, but
it was a pretty down game. Look, while we're talking about the end of an era, we should raise, if not our glasses, then some other piece of anatomy to Steve Hocking, who it feels like in his reign spent much of the past several years trying to stop Richmond's dynasty with a series of measures designed to combat us. Just felt, oh, the, t- The Tiggy Touchwood free kicks against our defenders. Ugh.
Look, the 2 points I want to make here is firstly, like, how is this okay? That what other sport does someone who's writing the rules go to run a club halfway through a season? Like, does he, if Geelong wins a premiership this year based on the rules he wrote, does he join the grand final parade?
Yeah.
It's extraordinary conflict of interest.
It was that, messy. Barry did nothing to dispel the rumour that the AFL is a very cosy boys' club.
Yeah, the fact that this is okay and he didn't have to, say, take 6 months off is like, you know, people in competitive industries would be shocked. Well, not shocked because I expect that from the AFL, but it would not be accepted in other industries. And secondly, you can't, like, we are still on track to have the worst free kick differential of the century. You can't tell me that he's sort of obviously tinkering the rules because he doesn't like our game span. He sits behind the umpires in games. He was sitting there for the grand final. You can't tell me that hasn't had some subconscious influence, because, I mean, it was extraordinary. We probably should have won and didn't. We probably should have stolen that game had we had the umpiring not been murdering us in the last quarter. Now, we didn't deserve to win for other reasons.
No, we didn't.
It's still extraordinary how bad the umpiring was in the last quarter.
Oh, yeah. There was a certain irony to Tom Lynch almost dragging a mediocre team over the line against the Suns rather than for them in front of a largely empty stadium. But he was great. Like, it felt as if we got him enough ball, he was going to win us the game. And if we're going to talk about positives from the game, the report that he was feeling much better after his knee surgery and moving far more freely. Like, it wasn't just the contested marking, but the follow up as well felt like it was back. So yeah, that was a big positive for me.
Yeah, actually, would have won the game if he'd hit that one last shot. Frustrating, but I completely agree. Big positive. He was the rock of the day. I thought Liam Baker was very brave.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and Grimes is we mentioned last week that he was back in best form. And we should, we started talking about positives, and now we're going to veer into a negative pretty quickly. But if Bashir Hooley's played his last game, and the word was that it was for a syndesmotriosis injury, it wasn't as bad as Broad or Bolter's. But if he's going to go out, Bashir Hooley going out with 500 metres gain and 10 intercept possessions, like, that's going out on your shield.
Actually, that's such a classic Bashir Hooley game. I had exactly the same notes and the exact same two stats written down. That's a really good point. Actually, slight tangent, Nick. In his post about it, he said, "Inshallah, I will return," sparking a debate amongst one Richmond channel on about what "Inshallah" means, because often to tourists or foreigners in the Middle East, it's a sort of "this is not in my hands," "this is probably not going to happen" phrase. But it does genuinely mean it's in God's hands. It doesn't mean it's not always a fob off to say it's not going to happen. It can be used in multiple contexts. I said this because I like to use the phrase because it's a beautiful phrase. But I also, funnily enough, after I had this conversation, I had a long debate with an Uber Arabic-speaking Uber driver about it. It was really interesting. But Inshallah does not necessarily mean that he's not coming back at the end of his post. It doesn't mean that he is either, but the meaning in that context is probably ambiguous. It's basically giving up, showing respect to God that he's not really in charge of it ultimately.
Hmm.
Well, thank you for tolerating that diversion.
Yeah, he was great. The defense is going to be that's literally half the defense gone in 2 weeks.
Almost to the identical injury.
I know. Oh, yeah, got it. And I really hope he gets to go out on his own terms, if rather than, you know, this being the end. But yeah.
I think about 99% of AFL footballers would probably say he's had some. Even if that was his last game, they said, well, he had a pretty good run of glory in the right moments. So even if it is the end, it's you know, I can live with it.
For those of us on CCJ Island, the plumbing clogged up and electricity failed at critical moments.
Oh, perhaps was invaded by pirates. Yeah, well, he got subbed out, so hopefully that wasn't. It was very convenient that the worst player to that moment developed a calf injury at halftime.
They said he had it coming into the game and just didn't.
Yeah, which they kind of have to, right?
Yeah, but they wouldn't lie.
Well,
lie about
unless
it.
Unless they're desperate watching the season go down the toilet and made a tactical sub and then had to justify the fact. We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll
but
see.
From a team balance point of view, we it was the smaller players who racked up, and you know, it was Ross, RCD, even Dow wasn't on the ground all the time when he was on. So, yeah.
Well, I guess the thing...
I have no doubt it was genuine.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well,
I think he could have played on, but I don't think he was at 100% and it was affecting his performance.
I'm 50-50, and if he plays this week, I'll be on the 50% complete skeptical camp, but I hope he doesn't play this week, because to me that shows that you're right and that he was properly injured and that was affecting his performance, because that's the only acceptable reason for his performance is that it was injury affected.
Yeah, they all have varying knocks at this time of year, but no,
a calf's a funny one to try and play through. But look, I think we're going around in circles here, but I think the key point was he didn't play well. His self-evident, we can both agree on. Speaking of which, since they're linked, how did you see Thompson Dow's five possessions?
I just have Dow flashes in my notes.
Yeah, no, I agree. He had one. He was one involved in one. I think he would have been officially credited the clearance, but he was in that beautiful the one decent goal we kicked all night that didn't well, sort of best goal that he was part of that chain.
Yeah, on the far wing from the TV side.
Yeah, he was actually credited with two clearances, so that was probably one of them.
Yeah. Look, he still looks small for a guy hanging around contests, you know, the Shane Edwards comparison, the young Shane Edwards comparisons, fit for a number of reasons, but yeah, and I don't know that he necessarily kept his spot, but he didn't look overawed.
No, if you sort of think back to the old days of a sub, when they sort of came on and you expected that lightning shot that they give, they normally get sort of 9 to 10 possessions because they're playing, they're fresh when everyone else is tired. And so five is not, by the old standard of what a sub should do, is probably not great. But yeah, he, as you said, flashes. I think this is the point we should talk about the midfield, Nick. It was a bit like, you know, watching Max Gorn games of like past years with the D's about us winning every tap, and you know, as you can imagine, I'd almost sort of personally take offense how Max Gorn would be dominating, winning every tap, and Melbourne couldn't win a clearance. It was sort of watching, and we had equal hitouts to advantage, despite at times having a 10 centimeter and athleticism advantage in the ruck. It was frustrating, and this was the saddest part of the game. Again and again, Chol would tap forward, and the tap was to Cochin, and Cochin couldn't get there, and he was beaten to the ball by the Sun. And I think, you know, if we'd drawn the centre clearances, we would have won the game. And that
was 12-4 in centre clearance.
I'm not sure everyone would feel that way, but the centre clearances was by far the most frustrating part of the game for me. And the thing is, Nick, I actually went through and looked at the clearance, because we're 18th in clearances, which it has been the case. Our clearances haven't been great through our premiership run. But
2020 finals notwithstanding.
Exactly. That was an incredible run, and as well been well documented, actually, by Wally Darley, amongst others, and ourselves. Wally Darley did it better. But we're 18th, and we're 18th by quite a long way. Well, the 17th team is quite a distance from us. So I just sort of tried to look a bit what's going wrong, like what's missing. And well, one thing is we don't actually have any clearance players in the top 40 or 50. The only one who's in the top 40 for centre clearances is Prestia. And if you look at clearances as a whole, the only two players of us who rate it all in the AFL stats are Prestia and Nank. So this is on a per-game basis. So we're sort of missing our two primary clearance getters. You know, Dusty in 17-18 was a centre clearance pig. He's no longer.
He's playing more time forward than ever. He's up about, I mean, it's only by a bit, but he's up 50% of game time. And I think Bolton at the start of the year was rating pretty well, but he's
dropped off.
Yeah. Well, and he's playing more time forward as well.
Believe it or not, Shedder has not actually dropped off a cliff.
No.
The reason he kind of feels like he has is because he was incredibly brilliant in 2020 at clearances. But actually, if you look at his last 4 years, he's producing... actually, no one has dropped off a cliff in their numbers the last 2 years.
It's one of the weird things.
But it is the it's just no one's getting clearances this year. Well, the only two players who are getting clearances at any respectable rate on our team are both not playing.
Well, it is. I mentioned at the start of the show 2016, and you know, Hampson, who was our lead ruck much of that year. He won a lot of hitouts, but he wasn't much good at clearance, and I just think, you know, that Nank's had injuries before, but we've always had Soldo to back him up. Like this is one of the longer stints we've had running third string ruckman, and I think it's okay to be critical of Chol, and also okay to remember that everyone's third string ruckman is terrible.
Yes. Suboptimal.
Yeah. So, yeah, you would expect to drop off at clearance from that. I do. Yeah. And I think the small forwards lack of production. It is. It's interesting that they're trying Dan Rioli as a small back, because it's not as if the small forwards are overwhelmingly productive at the moment. Although Arts has been playing more in the Kane Lambert up the field role, so he's been winning more football, but has one goal in the last 5 weeks. So yeah, we are mentioned about Lynch, but it does feel like we're pretty dependent on Lynch, Jack, Bolton, and Dusty to kick the goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to sort of on a dependency thing, just the last thing I wanted to say about the centre clearances, it highlighted to me that we're probably quite reliant on Nank at the start of the year. His centre square work was, his aggression, his follow-up work, and not all of that is actually captured in the stats. I think sort of helped patch a few holes in our ageing, slightly injured midfielder. I think looking at the numbers, my biggest takeaway was that we really missed the sort of a fully fit Nank. because he makes a huge difference. But
Nank, Prestia, and Lambert all being out is a fair chunk of midfield depth out.
Yeah, and that sort of going to what you said, like that's, you know, I've been wrong about Jake Hartz in the 22, but that's a lot to ask Jake Hartz to play the Lambert role. You know, Jake Hartz and Lambert are both not VFL, career VFL players. Like Lambert was the best player in the VFL and was playing a midfield role, not radically dissimilar to the one he plays in the AFL. That was not Jake Hartz. Jake Hartz was not a midfielder in the VFL. Yes, but the small forward production remains, and I didn't see the issue, but apparently Caro went off the long run about she heard a club insider say to her that George might be a future captain. And
George, 28 metres gain, Castagna.
Yes, nicely done. So she set that idea on fire and gave it a Viking burial, as I, only in her inimitable style.
Inimitable style, yeah.
Anything else from the game?
Oh, look, on Hyphenated Island, was a tough place to be. I thought Riley struggled to get in the game. What did you think of Jack Ross's game?
Solid without being, 15 touches off the half back line. It was sort of, I couldn't.
Yeah, in only 67% game time as well.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I'm still not sure. I know it's a deliberate tactic of the club because they to turn him to something other than a midfielder. But I'm not convinced he can play another position at midfield. But sort of my mind is open on the issue.
Yeah. It was a pretty tough game. We had 75 clangers for the match. That's a lot.
Yeah, it was not a game that was going on anyone's highlight reel.
No.
Any Richmond supporters' highlight reel?
No, particularly not. I almost had the thought, is it actually an advantage to be in a hub?
I've been working on a theory that, you know, the hub, it was a contributing factor to our 2020 premiership. Like, you can never prove it, but, and, you know, Conrad Marshall's such a sort of mawkish softy that he puts everything onto a touchy-feely emotional things. But, you know, part of the theme of his book is that the hub restored the esprit de corps of the team. And Melbourne Storm had an awful run in last year's NRL. I know you couldn't care less about rugby league, but the empirical evidence is the hubs are good for performance, not that they're bad for it.
I have. I'm aware that there are Richmond / Melbourne Storm fans, so that certainly made me more sympathetic towards them.
Look, last year's premiership was amazing from a just a sporting perspective. But moving on, we're not the Melbourne Tigers, we're not the Storm.
No, look, the last thing I wanted to mention about the game was, you know, the people potting Richmond supporters for the crowd, like they are telling on themselves as bad faith actors for me, like the curse you disloyal fans for not turning up to a game that was announced 24 hours beforehand on a school on a Thursday night in the middle of winter in the midst of a global socially transmitted pandemic.
And one of the coldest nights of the year in a non-home game.
I think it's just fine if people are not going to the football because they feel uncomfortable with being around other people in the current circumstance. That is just fine.
Oh, by the way, if you go to Docklands at night, like Thursday night, having sort of done it on Saints game, I've forgotten what night of the week that was, they don't put extra trams on. There's no extra public transport. You just go with a regular schedule. It's difficult, but sort of like a basic point, as I understand, like a lot of people decide to go to the football 3 to 4 days before, So, excuse me, there's a traffic truck going by outside, but people don't decide on the day of the game, and they have to organize logistics. They have to work out a way to get the kids there. It just doesn't work like that. But people go at the last moment.
Those of us who live out of Melbourne, like going to football games is planned quite a long way in advance. Like flights in and out of Melbourne on the weekend are really expensive, and you need to be booked a fair way in advance. And I know the AFL loves having this flexible schedule, but I don't think this one's on the
AFL.
It's a series of cumulative factors.
They're
improvising, but when people.
But the end result is a series of factors that make I hate the uncertainty. Like I'll go to the Pies game because it's the Pies this week, but I mean it's just finding out at the last moment, still not knowing how I'm going to get a ticket because I'm going to go with some friends. Like it's just it's awful, and the uncertainty is awful, and leaving everything to the last moment. God bless the event planners and people like that. Obviously frontline health workers far more important, but it's dealing with the uncertainty is difficult. Anyway, Nick, do you want to talk? There's been a lot of controversy. I'm quite keen. Well, not there's been a Jake Niall wrote an interesting piece about Adam Serra.
I agree.
I think the fact he wrote it was interesting.
Yeah, and so it clearly because those guys, particularly. I don't think the list managers talk, but they certainly talk to player agents, and I don't know if you've been watching the show Loki, but one point Owen Wilson goes, "Oh, you love to talk, and that could describe pretty much any player agent, I assume. So the drums are beating in the football industry of who are the players who are going to be moving. So I suspect there is both smoke and fire on this one, but I took exception to the premise of this was equivalent to the Jager O'Meara situation. I mean there are similarities. Jager O'Meara was 22 years old, looking to move back to Melbourne. He cost first and second round draft picks. But sort of when saying that the move didn't work for Hawthorn, well, there was no one they could have picked in that. It is possible that they could have got someone of equivalent value, but you have draft picks. You draft callow 18-year-olds for the purpose of having highly functional 22-year-olds, and with a high risk that even among high picks, never mind. By the time the Hawks traded the 10th pick in the draft, which could be around where. Where our draft pick would be, like it's unusual and exceptional for a player to turn out as good as Jager O'Meara has with that draft pick, and you've got, O'Meara. Injury question, but yeah.
Could I just look? Funnily enough, I wasn't expecting you to say that, and I completely agree. And it was sort of, I don't think the Hawks necessarily made a mistake. They were watching the end of his dynasty. They rolled the dice to have a long shot to sort of have a quick rebuild. It didn't work, but the other strategy might not necessarily have been any better.
Well, and particularly when they'd traded the previous five first round draft picks or away. There's no one I think it's obsessing too much to say, look, this one decision doesn't fit within this broader narrative. Well, we've this narrative that we should invest in the draft. Well, we have been investing in the draft. We haven't. We've traded away one first round draft pick for a player in this era. Otherwise, we've faithfully gone to the draft. And this year, you know, we've traded one first round draft pick for another. So we've got.
And guess what? The Richmond Premiership, aside from I think one player, wasn't built on our first round draft picks in this decade. The previous decade, we actually blew most of them. Like, there's no. It's football teams make. Like Hawthorn has made hundreds of decisions. We've made hundreds of decisions. We've got heaps wrong. Some terrible decisions over the last decade, but obviously more right ones.
Yeah, we've had a dynasty in spite of doing Ben Lennon and Corey Ellis back to back, and I think list managers, you know, there's certainly a strategy, but also I think you can't worry too much about the strategy, rather than getting absolutely maximizing the value of every first round draft pick, of every late draft pick, rookie pick. Category B, potential free agent. Like, it's a salary cap league, so you've just got to get the maximum value from your group. And if you know, if there's value in trading for Chera, which, you know, depends on the parameters of the trade. But if there's value there, and it's hard not to, you know. Slide the Cochin magnet out and the Chera magnet in. Like, he sort of takes on that role in the team and can do it for 10 years.
Here's the slide. Like, from a list beating perspective, I completely agree. Like, A, that there's no set path, and B, like, if you're going to argue, well, Richmond shouldn't trade for any mature players, I need to go for a draft. Well, we should trade Dustin Martin. If you think we've got no chance to win a flag, like, just have the courage and say, all right, trade everyone. Tom Lynch. Dustin, trade them all. Blow up the salary cap because, it's just not going for Chera because you think you can't win a flag again is the same as just trading everyone out. It's just more emotionally hard. But rationally, the two things are equal. Anyway, the issue I have is a far more practical one, Nick. And there is a thing, though, when you trade for a mature player, you lower your range of outcomes. You're more likely to get a good player, but you're less likely to get an unexpected star. It does happen occasionally that players turn out to be twice as good as you expected them to be, but you lose the extremes of outcomes. And, you know, you do get the all Australians in the teens and 20s sometimes with the draft picks. But the thing I don't quite understand, Nick, is I don't quite get what questions Sarah is answering, because I don't think now statistically he's just at an age where people blossom. Like, next year is basically the first year when AFL, he's 21 at the moment, he's 22. That's about when players start hitting their peak. 21 year olds tend to not be as good, and so he's just on the upward.
Particularly but, for inside midfielders who, you know, normal Dusty notwithstanding, take a while to build up their bodies and build up their fitness. Like,
is that the thing? Because, like, just looking at his raw stats, and I was going to ask you what he was like as juniors, because guess what? By the way, guess what? He's currently the 66th rated mid in the AFL. He's 68th. 66th and 67th is Graham and Cochin. He's actually in a little band. His performance in the moment is not, that's AFL ratings. He gets higher to stats and that, but he's real sort of inside creative stuff is sort of no better than what he's got. You're getting him because you think next year he's going to be even better, but he's not particularly inside, Nick. That's what I don't get. He doesn't get that much clearance ball. So why is he a Cochin replacement? I ask this as a genuine question because I can't see it in the numbers.
He's not a battering ram like Cochin, but he's part of a midfield group. Like, he's a genuine midfielder, and he's different. He's not a super explosive athlete, but you want the ball. He makes good decisions, and you want the ball in his hand. So you know, you have to have a complimentary group around him. But he punishes the other team, and the graph is heading up. That's what you're buying into. So yeah, you're not drafting for a star. I mean, Amira was, you know, a former first pick in the priority draft from his whole age group, but hadn't played football in 2 years, so he was a pretty exceptional circumstance. So you don't have quite the same risk, but you don't.
Yeah, it's a completely different transaction, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Other than the sort of the point at which they're being acquired, I think.
Yeah. Okay. And just wrapping this conversation up, we spent quite a lot of time on it. What do you think is fair value?
Well, having said it's quite different to the Amira trade, first and second round draft pick actually sounds pretty reasonable.
Okay. Agreed.
So we mentioned before last week about the VFL team struggling with no tall players. This week they had Samson Ryan back. And gee, for his overmatch, and look, the team they were playing and lost to weren't all that good in the Northern Bullions. Oh, sorry, the Northern Blues. They're back to being.
They're the Northern Blues thing.
He was both our best ruck and our best key forward, which is unfortunate when there's only one of him. But yeah, I watched a bit of the last quarter. That was a frustrating game. But I thought there was a bit to take out of it.
Yeah, the coach interview was fairly flat afterwards. And we did win the hit out, so well done, Samson, on sort of, a nice bounce back game. I guess the biggest takeaway, to me, there were two. So Will Mann had a very solid game, actually, so did Ryan Mansell. I look at the numbers.
Big career. Big career high for Mantle. He's been averaging 14 disposals a game in the VFL, and he had 26.
Yeah, actually, now I look at it, there's more stories, but Rioli getting 26 is rare air for him, and five tackles, interesting. But yeah, the standout stories for me was Matty Parker, who we'll talk about in a sec in the game preview. But Sydney Stack with his 29 disposals and four tackles, I think we could. It might be too early, but gee, I think a bit of Sydney Stack magic is something this team could really do with Nick.
Yeah, look, there was a lot between him and Rioli. There was a lot of handballing the ball to each other, but yeah, they won a stack of football between them. You mentioned Matty Parker. He's averaging nearly 10 tackles a game in his three games in the VFL, and had 31 disposals. Also, in that three games, he's kicked six behinds without a goal. So you sort of he's been an emergency, so he's clearly in the minds of the selectors, and I think that forward pressure is a key part of it. But I think also that he has some similarities with George in his disposal efficiency sometimes.
Which no doubt you're thrilled about.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly causes me a degree of pain. Will Martin, extremely, just a real work rate player. They are the Bullions, by the way, although the VFL app incorrectly has them as the Blues.
Oh, sorry about that.
But we've talked about half a dozen players without talking about Maurice Rioli Jr.'s goal, which was pretty incredible.
Yeah, about the eighth time I watched it on Twitter, I thought, okay, all right, it's had a good run now. He was being chased by a centre-half back, quite an athletic centre-half back.
He was being chased by three different players, and none of them.
Yeah, but the only one who had a chance to catch him was the centre-half back.
None of the three made it into the screen.
Yeah, look, it wasn't. It was a nice goal. What it means in the long run, I'm not disputing that. I'm just sort of going from the baseline that everyone's seen it now, and it was a good goal. It's exciting. He's going to need to work on that. He had 9 disposals. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
He needs to win more football, but that he can do sustained power running was what I took away from it. You know, like as with Daniel, not just having, it's unthinkable, Arts or Stengel or some of the other more leaden foot and small forwards, it's unthinkable that they would have been able to do that. So you see both, the immense promise, but also the work that still needs to be done for Morris.
Indeed. Let's move on to the Pies, Nick.
Yep.
And we think we're having a bad year.
Yeah. They had in their game on the weekend, they had a very similar age and experience profile to us.
Oh my God, that was exactly what I was going to say. We kept doing this, but yeah.
Yeah, it's like we've been doing this for a while.
It's almost like we're brothers.
It's certainly, in terms of the least hyped rematch of the 2018 preliminary final that didn't happen, imaginable.
Yeah, it's not. I'm focusing on the traditional rival angle. Because,
yeah.
You know, once the game starts, you know, one of their players is going to annoy us. Their fans are going to be annoying, you know, and it's going to be on. Like, you know, we've got to draw up those old ways that we used to make football meaningful when we weren't competing for premierships. And, you know, not that we're out of this season. So the game is still for points. It's just, you know, it's bloody hard with the injuries that we've got.
Yeah. And look, they're having the season. Well, they had the off season from the hell and the regular season to match. But I found, you know, they're still the core of the team. Like you look at their big ball winners from last weekend, and it's Taylor Adams, Brady Grundy, Pendlebury,
Sidebottom actually played, even though he didn't get that much of it.
Not very well. The ends, age has caught up with him a bit this season. I mean, he'll probably dominate us as he's spent a career doing, but he hasn't been very good this year.
No. Pendlebury is still a sort of top 40 bid. Which was interesting. Jack Crisp is going okay.
Yeah, he's always been good. They've struggled to kick goals, and they're still pretty dependent on sort of the Degoe, Elliott, Majacek triumvirate. And I do think when you're dependent on those three players, perhaps Majacek aside, you're giving up a bit in terms of your defensive pressure.
Yeah, and I believe the Lesser Dacos is injured as well this week.
No, that's not bad. They do of the younger brigade. I really like Isaac Quainer. I'd love him as a Richmond player. Caleb Poulter, who was a player apparently we looked at in the draft, and who the Pies got in their ill-fated trade with GWS, which is going to cost them a top 5 pick in this year's draft. He looks all right. They have got some young talent, but it's a team of misfit toys, otherwise at the moment.
Yeah, by the way, I don't think Dacos is injured. I've just Googled it. It didn't come up. My apologies. Yeah, I mean, obviously they lost to the Saints last week. They're in. I can't explain why they're so bad. A bit like you. Like,
no, they're on expected shots. They should have won by about 10 points.
Yeah. Okay.
They're a heavy possession. Bad teams are never all that much fun to watch, but they're a particularly dire form of high possession, low impact team. You know, they're fourth in the AFL in disposal differential, but 16th in inside 50 differential. So that's a lot of, disposal on the outer wing going nowhere, and that's part of in their DNA. They've, it was a very defensive game plan to avoid coughing up turnovers in dangerous positions. But
in fairness, what it was working was one of the reasons we had trouble with them, because it is it was a good way to play against us if you did it well. That's a game plan, Dimmer hates, which I like, and he barely hides his contempt for that kind of game plan, which is one of the many things I find enjoyable about late era Dimmer press conferences.
So it feels like they should be better than they've been playing. So yeah, I don't know what the betting line is, but I assume we're reasonable favourites, but. I don't know which Richmond team's going to turn up this week. Who's going to be fit to play?
I've completely lost confidence. So decline is never a straight line, just like progression for young players is. So like, I'd sort of
week to week performance varies. You know, that whole thing of you never going as well or as badly as you think you are.
I think there's every chance that I just tried to find the there's no betting market for it, at least on one book. I think it's because the season's so unpredictable. I don't think because they've officially we know where we're playing. We're on the off-Broadway Sunday afternoon spot, which I'm actually. Like I understand most people annoyed about, but I am, a mutual friend of ours is quite excited. Yeah, there's no market on two different bookmakers, I think, because the timing's so uncertain. But I am enjoying that some people are actually looking forward to an off-Broadway sort of late afternoon spot, having an afternoon beer in the sun and then go to the game. So I like that optimistic take, and I will go to this game and enjoy. Look, frankly, I wish it was a 2 o'clock game so we could really enjoy the history of Richmond Collingwood at the G in the afternoon sun. But this is something. So I'm looking forward to the game and the theatre that it'll provide, and watching some of our greats another time.
Yeah, I'd really like a better performance. And it's a banged up playing group, but yeah, I'd be surprised if we didn't get a reaction this week.
Agreed.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Target.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy's played in more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010.
To kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Coming to slow. He's gone. No free kick, surely.
In the final home and away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tiger time! Tiger of old, the strong and we bold, for we're from Tiger, yellow and black, we're from Tiger Land.
Go Tigers.